You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the finale episode of the American Horror Story podcast on Bald Move. At least the finale for season 9, the 1984 season. This is the 9th and final episode. Final girl, final podcast. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Cecily, it's been a long, strange journey. We spent the first half of the season on one night, and then we covered 30 years in the last three episodes. What did you think of how things wrapped up on Camp Redwood in 1984?
You know what? After I watched it a second time, I appreciated it a little bit more, but still didn't like it. Still didn't like it at all.
Okay, let's walk ourselves through this, because I laughed and had a lot of fun. Like, I felt like this is a good season finale for this kind of silly, bloody slasher homage to the 1980s, but you were really pissed, and I think
I almost rage quit this podcast.
I think that I know one of the reasons, and it's like they didn't give us Billy Idol.
Yeah, they didn't give us Billy Idol. They didn't even give us any music festival at all.
Yeah, we were really excited for like the giant ghost murder fuck fest. It was going to be this Camp Redwood Firefest, and we didn't get it. We didn't get Billy Idol. You said you read an article where they just wrapped up filming the season like last week.
Yeah.
Or the week before.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that like Billy Idol's been honey dicking them this whole season? Like,
maybe.
Oh, sure, mate. Yeah, I'm going to show up. I'm going to show up for the finale. Yeah, you just don't just oh, I'm sorry I missed I'm sorry I missed it this week. I'll be back next. Oh, I've got 5 minutes for you. And he just doesn't show up.
Well, maybe. But they also very early in the season decided to cut off one of the episodes. That they decided, oh, we've got one extra, let's just not do 10 episodes.
Yeah, it's going to be the Billy Idol concert episode.
Maybe, but last week should have been the Halloween episode. I don't know. It was it was all over the place. And yeah. It was a really fun story, and I really had a lot of fun this season. I like the season as a whole. I just don't think it was a good finale episode. Or I just don't know why in the latter half of the season they started to do things that they couldn't wrap up within 9 episodes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing that turned the light switch for me is like when Finn Wittrock shows up. And
let the Wittrock. Someone wrote us an email that said that.
I love it. And when he shows up and then he reveals that he's Bobby Jingles, and I'm like, oh, fuck, yes, of course. Of course he would come back to figure out all these different contradictions between his dad. And the fact that the ghost had this 30-year-long murder montage of the Night Stalker, and I fucking love this guy so much, and everything about his performance in this episode, the Montana seduction, the misery ankle breaking. This guy has been having so much fun, and he's been doing such a good. And the other thing is, like, you know, we kind of talked about how it's a little bit bothersome how they make the Night Stalker cool and how he's a real historical murderer, mm-hmm. and there's still like, you know, families of the victims around. But I feel like, you know, It's kind of fitting in for him to be stuck in this place being murdered for eternally for 30 years. It's like,
right. Just has one nice dinner at the Hotel Cortez every Halloween night.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's how he gets away, obviously. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple other like towards the end where they make this into like a sad, syrupy ending that I'm like, I don't know if the rules of the ghosts in this show like earned that or what. But I thought it was, this has been a fun and silly season that I haven't really ever taken seriously. And it's the first time that's kind of happened for me in America. I've always kind of come in and like, oh, yeah, I'm really in and I'm excited. And I'm going to get on board and try to hang with the narrative. And it always disappoints me. And I will say that the last two episodes, they had a little bit of fun, you know, the roller rink scene, but they were kind of dumb. They didn't live up to like the cool, fun action of the first half of the season. But I thought this finale kind of brought it back to that level. And I liked it. I liked the Billy Lord screaming that the 80s will never die.
Billy Lord doing all of the screaming.
So good. Do you want to talk more and just kind of like generalities, or should we get right into the episode?
Yeah, let's talk about the episode.
Some brief housekeeping. First up, on Swizzbold, our new network that Jim, Cecily, and I launched, the debut of Three Right Turns, a political podcast that I'm hosting. It's an introduction pod where I talk about my cultural, religious, and economic background and how it informs the show and the objectives of Three Right Turns. If that sounds cool, check out Swizzbold.com or search for Three Right Turns wherever you listen to podcasts. Pickle Me This, our Rick and Morty podcast, is banging this week because the season premiere of Rick and Morty just dropped, season 4. It was amazing. It's a good time. There's a bunch of fascist Care Bears in it. Check that out on Pickle Me This. On Balmu TV, Alexis and Cecily are doing His Dark Materials on HBO, aka Her Magical Ferret Hour. I'm still trying to figure out what the fuck even is dust. Also on Balmu TV, Jim and I are going to be talking about The Mandalorian this week. We're going to be previewing that on the new Disney service. Bald Movies features Dr. Sleep last week. This week we're going to be seeing Ford versus Ferrari. Check that out if you're interested in those movies. Our Watchmen podcast, We Do, is still weird as fuck. You can find the latest stuff we're doing at baldmove.com or search for any of these show names where you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, we have caught up to 2019 as Finn Wittrock Ubers into Camp Redwood. The camp is now fenced off with private property signs everywhere. We pass an old wood chipper that is menacingly stained with old dried blood.
Yep, Chekhov's wood chipper.
Chekhov's wood chipper. All around are the remains of the Camp Redwood Fest, the tattered main stage, the vendor booths. And I know I was getting excited, like, oh, my man, we're going to get to see this like rock and roll massacre. It's going to be awesome. And then Montana shows up and asks what a cell phone is. And, you know, he quickly determines that she's like this person living out of time. I love when she gets her hands on the phone that she's like banging the screen.
Yeah.
Because there's no, you would, like, if someone went back in 1989 and handed you a cell phone, like, there's no visible buttons on it. Like, how? You can just touch this thing? What?
Yeah, I mean, I know the concept of a touchscreen, but there's also sensors underneath, and that's what you need to apply force to. Of course. Of course. Mm-hmm. Bang on it. And if it doesn't work, blow into the little hole ports. Right.
Cell phone technology works like a Nintendo. Why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
He starts asking some questions, but she shuts it down and says he's in danger. Now, the second time I watched this, I noticed there's a lot of inconsistencies here because her eyes kind of bug out. And she's like, everyone around here will try to kill you.
Likely to kill you.
What the fuck? Everyone around here has taken like a blood ghost oath to protect this child.
30 years ago.
Yeah.
And the urges are just there at the surface, though.
The only ghost that might give you problems is Margaret Booth, who has been hiding out this entire time, which also is going to be a contradiction, turns out.
Or Ramirez.
And Ramirez, who reconstitutes every periodically as a flesh and blood demon and could escape the camp and kill Bobby at any time. So what the fuck is she? I don't know. This is left over from the script where Billy Idol is going to come back, I think. So he says, I'm not leaving till I get answers to my father, which is what she realizes is that this is the son of old man Jingles. This is Bobby Jingles. And she gets all teary and hugs him tight. She then takes him to the counselor's cabin. And he says, you know what? It's crazy. You look just like Montana Duke. But she's dead. And if she's not, she should be in her 50s. And she's like, no, that's totally me. And she asks him a bunch of questions about what people think of the 80s, if Judd Nelson ever won his Oscar.
It feels like he should have known who she was immediately when she showed up. Because he recognized Trevor. He recognized Margaret.
And he has his headshot and he's done all this research. And like, you know, he's personally invested.
Yeah.
But I mean, I also think that it's fair.
No, my mind wouldn't immediately believe I'm looking at a ghost.
Yeah. Right. Like, oh, shit, you must be a ghost. It might be, you know, you might think this is a terrible coincidence. But so then Trevor and his enormous personality shows up.
Hey.
And Bobby Jingles recognizes them all because of his extensive research. He fills in that he was raised by his aunt and she died last year. And now he is on a search for the truth because on her deathbed, she confessed that her father wasn't a violent killer. He was a peace-loving video manager.
Why wouldn't she tell him that to begin with?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. To protect him from what?
Yeah, I don't know.
Who cares? The season's over. That's a choice that she made, and she defended it with her life. But now he's here looking for truth, and he also reveals that he's gotten checks. Someone sent him free money all his life. I don't know.
Someone sent you checks, would you just cash them? If you got $100 check every month, would you just cash it?
I don't know.
I'd probably go to the bank and be like, is this legitimate? Why?
Yeah, right. I'd be like, what the fuck is, because like my fear would be I'd do that for 5 years and then somehow somebody be like, oh, this has all been a mistake. You got to pay it back with interest.
Right. Or, you know, having accepted someone's money means that you are essentially, you know, complicit in something else.
Oh, right, right.
Like if you receive money, they could say that you did anything to have received the money because you're cashing the checks, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that'd be a good like drug dealer plan, like to send like random people $1,000 checks each week and see which ones cash them and then blame it all on them when you know, like they're the L Hef. I've been, look at all the tribute I've been paying them all this time. You just like manipulate them with their own greed.
Yep.
Ooh, I feel a movie treatment coming on.
All right.
I'm way too busy and lazy for all that.
American Horror Story season 10.
Season 10. Yeah, from my lips to your ears, Murphy.
That is a real horror story, what's happening in the drug cartels and drug wars going on.
As dramatized in Tigers Are Not Afraid. So, Montana and Trevor have to explain to him the concept that they're dead, and they do it in the most fabulous way possible, which Montana blows her brains out, and Trevor slices his own throat, and Finn Wittrock is obviously...
It's such a traumatic way, too.
Yeah.
You can just, like, tell him first that we're ghosts and, you know, we can be killed and we'll come back.
Well, they did.
They just had to prove it.
I think they did. They just wouldn't believe it. And they're like, let's cut to the chase. And they're all bubbly and happy about it.
Yeah.
And although they also have Chekhov's dick shot because he's like, yeah, shoot me anywhere, but not the dick because I got shot there once and it stings. Oh, that's actually referring to the time he got murdered.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. 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 Just putting.
What did you think? Oh, as a ghost.
Yes, as
some
a ghost
point.
At some point.
Oh, okay.
Because that's the other thing is
no,
like
he died by penis shot.
A little inconsistency is these ghosts can still feel pain and they don't like to be killed. It's an unpleasant thing for them. But I guess for the demonstration purpose, you know.
Right. It's momentary, I guess.
Yeah. Like
it's gone.
They're like the stage magicians that like put pin like needles through their tongue just to prove that they can't, because it's like a pain tolerance thing, not a. I always wondered, like, why is that a trick? That's not like a trick. It's not a magic trick. You're sticking a spike through your tongue and it hurts. You're just doing it anyway.
Right.
So, super impressed. You know, like, it's going to be a magic trick that someone comes out, stretches themselves, pulls up their shirt, stretches themselves out, and lets people pink belly them. Look at the magic. Look at the, I'm withstanding the purple nurples and the pink bellies.
Or like guys who get shot in the stomach by a cannon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now that's
pain tolerance still.
But still, it's almost like, you know, getting shot with a cannon is a whole other level than like sticking a fucking knitting needle through your tongue.
Yeah, maybe a different level, but still just pain tolerance, right? I thought that's what we were talking about.
But it's superhuman. Like anyone can stick a needle through their tongue. Like getting shot by a cannon in the stomach?
With enough training, yeah, mm-hmm. I could do it.
That's what I'm saying. I can stick a needle through my tongue right now, no training. Like, you don't have to be
tough
to survive.
Well, I can technically be shot by a cannon right now, no training. And yeah, if I survive, pay tolerance.
Then that's just lesson one.
Lesson two, I'll tell you when I get
shot by a slightly larger cannonball. All right, fuck it. You're right. It all makes perfect sense. So they also say, look, we're all ghosts here and it's cool, but the problem with you wanting to meet your dad is twofold. Number one, there's a killer out to get you. And number two, we haven't seen the ghost version of him in like 30 years, which brings on a flashback to 1989. And
flashback.
We briefly get excited again because we think, oh, my
the
God.
Stage. I can hear the power cords in the distance.
Yeah, we're going to get Billy Idol. We're going to get this massacre. Margaret says she's all upset with Courtney because the talent isn't showing up. The Night Stalker's getting restless because he wants to meet Billy Idol.
Drinking a slice with a straw.
And then Courtney runs in and tells Margaret that Trevor is sabotaging the axe. So she shoots Courtney in the face. And we find Trevor is turning everyone away. He's like taking the Kaja Gugu's.
Are you having
tour
a stroke?
Bus. I think so. And he's blocked the main entrance of the camp, and he is turning everyone away with a different excuse every time. The fire department shut us down. A water main broke. Everybody's really upset because, especially since he's not giving out refunds. But Margaret shows up and is super pissed and confronts him about ruining his plan. And she shoots him off the property, shoots him right in the kneecaps and the dick, and leaves him for dead. Montana comes out screaming and begs him to crawl across the property line, which he tries. But dragging that wounded hog is just too much.
I just want to remind you,
too much for him.
It is way too much. Brooke helps him walk, but dragging the hog, it's too much.
It's the equivalent of trying to drag 30 to 50 feral hogs around. You just you couldn't do it with a 4x4.
I just want to remind you, the last time we left these star-crossed lovers, Montana was breaking up with Trevor because she needed to be with someone as fucked up as she is. Guess she recognized that Trevor is way fucked up.
Well, no. All it takes is a little... Brooke healed her with her self-sacrifice.
Ah,
she healed her psychological damage.
Oh,
So you know that's cool. If your medical plan will cover boyfriend getting shot in the dick and your arch rival carrying him across the property line so he can reincarnate into a ghost and thus teach you a moral lesson. I mean, you should take him up on it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Still a better love story than Twilight.
So as he's dying out, Brooke comes in and, as we said, helps him across a property line. And Montana says, "Why did you do this?" And she says, "Because I'm not like you." And that fixes. I also love
the very last murder between these two was by words.
I also love how Montana's like holding Trevor, like, and saying it's okay, you can go, and like shuts his eyes, and as soon as he reincarnates, she just audibly drops the body.
Yeah, dumps it.
Like these Foley guys put in this like sound of like
a sack of potatoes.
Yeah, sack of potatoes hitting the ground. It's hilarious. And yeah, she explains after this flashback that simple act changed her forever. She realized what an asshole she was, consumed with vengeance over nothing, and she didn't want to be like that.
Redemption.
And she led the entire ghost community into the light. They became a tight-knit community and took care of each other. And they realized that to stop the killing at the camps, they had to stop Margaret and her duo of killers. Dylan's super easy to kill. There's one of the cute 1970s ghost camp counselor girls lured him into the forest, and Trevor machetes him. And I love the dialogue in this fucking episode is so good. He says, "Bitch and stash, hombre, but I can't have you dying here." And he kicks him off into the Angelos forest, and he shouts, "Public land!" as he like rolls down the hill.
Yes.
Like
that's, yeah, they're that close to the property line of the Angelus Forest.
I also love how ghost, like evil property ghost forces respect property lines.
Yes.
Like, you know, at one point, this evil force that reincarnated people roamed. Oh, I guess it all started with Jingle's mom, right? But
yeah.
Still, why does it respect, like, what if a surveyor comes over and, like, sells off 10 acres of the property? Does it, the ghost, like, well, shit, I guess, you know.
I think it's like the Overlook Hotel, where after a certain amount of, you know, death, trauma, devastation, the property itself becomes haunted.
But why the actual fences
like the
and lines?
Like Hotel Cortez, too, the actual fences and lines, I don't know. How does it know? What if someone...
Am I arguing ghost logic here? I feel like
I think you're arguing ghost logic.
Yeah. And this is, for what it's worth, it this has been consistent throughout all of American Horror Story history.
It has been.
So.
This is supernatural magic, so just accept it or die.
Yeah. And it doesn't apply to public land. So Montana reveals herself to the Night Stalker and tries to seduce him, saying that she's missed her. And he's like, this fest is a bust. I'm bummed about Billy. I'm going to go kill this kid up in Alaska. So then she goes, well, guess what? Billy Idol actually made it through, and he gets angry and he says, "I know about the blockade and the roadblock." And she angrily retorts back, "Billy made it through because he's a survivor." And she
"You can't
quotes,
sing Rebel Yell and not be a rebel."
That's right. So he then apologizes to her and says, "You know what, babe? Everyone's coming at the king. I got to stay on guard." So she leads him to one of the murder shacks, and obviously there's no Billy Idol there. And that's a bummer. But then all the ghosts in the camp are in the cabin, and Chef Birdie's back. They all take turns killing this dickwad. You know who didn't show up? The porn producer.
And half of the campers. I would say more than half of the campers.
Campers?
From the 50s and the 70s. We got three counselors.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Including the hyper hiker.
Yeah, where's all the happy days hikers?
Right.
Or the campers. Anyway, we're missing something there. So they all take turns killing this dickwad. I love the hyper hiker screaming, "You're not supposed to be here."
Fine. Okay.
Is the hyper hiker have pre-existing psychological damage? Because none of the ghosts behave like him.
No,
none of them are missing fragments of their. They all talk a game about it, but it's like.
But you know,
fucking Beric Dondarrion on Game of Thrones always talking about losing pieces of himself, but it's never like vital to the plot.
Right. I mean, if he had brain damage because he's died and come back so many times, then I would believe that. So make him a target of being killed so many times, but he's not. He's
also,
just
how does he get
there.
Off of the property?
Right.
Because they picked him up off the main road.
Yep.
That was one of the unexplained, you know, there's always a couple loose dangling plot threads at the end. Hyper Hiker is one of them for sure.
He's not supposed to be there.
He's not supposed to be there. This ghost slaughter is just so bloody and metal. It's like so much blood. It's like a Bram Stoker's Dracula amount of blood. The ghosts form a literal death watch over him, and every time he reincarnates, they're there to kill him. And there's I like how Montana calls Satan Beezlefuck. And for 30 years, they have this montage where Ray sledgehammers him Misery style, and the Night Stalker's performance is almost like an Adam Sandler comedy. Like the way he contorts his face, and it's just really fucking funny. There's these camp counselors that do a double synchronized eye gouge with branches.
Yeah.
Xavier chainsaws him to death. And then apparently Montana and Trevor spend the rest of the day regaling him with all the stories of the ghost death that they brought the Night Stalker.
Yes.
Because day turns to night
day
in the space of this montage.
To night.
Either it's super important to get this guy out of here or it's not. But anyway, they explain that the Jingles wanted him protected, so the ghosts kind of, for lack of anything better to do, took this up as their kind of personal mantle and revealed that they've been saving his life from the Night Stalker for these 30 years.
Yeah. I don't know why Ramirez, after maybe 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, Ramirez would still wake up thinking he wants to kill Bobby Richter and not any other thing besides just getting the hell out of there.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, I mean, again, also there's this thing where, like, I don't know, maybe Satanic Resurrection works different, is that he did seem like he was like discombobulated when he's like coming back to life. So maybe there is that brief kind of rebooting period.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But anyway, so at this precise time in this 30 year history, no, I'm sorry, excuse me. 20 minutes earlier, we flashback the most pointless flashback
I've ever seen.
Chef Birdie and Chet are on their death watch and they're playing Pictionary, waiting for him to reincarnate. She wants to make it interesting. 30 years she's waited to make her move, to get it in side her with Chet.
Or get it in.
And
not sure how it's going to go. They're equal opportunity lovers.
That's true.
Out.
That's true. She says that, it's about time that he try an older, more mature person that can teach him a thing or three.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment,
makes the best sandwiches. Wink.
Oh, yeah. She's going to make him a ham sandwich. All right. So at this point where Satan exploits their momentary distraction to re-enter Ramirez and resurrects him to the whispers of
vengeance.
He gets up and he's still good at killing, and he quickly overpowers them. And then as he's walking around the camp looking for something to do, I guess, he overhears Trevor, Montana, and Bobby talking in the cabin 20 minutes into the future. And he bursts into the cabin. The ghosts all take turns running interference for him. But Ramirez, he's just too good at killing.
Mm-hmm.
He tracks him down right at the gates and they fight. Ramirez cuts him up pretty good. And it looks like he's about to get the kill, but then the whole ghost pack just resurrects and falls on him like a pack of wild animals. Montana screams at him to run and seek his answers at Red Meadows Asylum.
Yep, we get another fun vengeance there.
No Satan's here.
No Satan's, just all vengeance and redemptions.
It's Satan's taking a back seat to satanic vengeance.
Yeah.
So it turns out, guess who the medical director at Red Meadows Asylum is?
One Donna.
It's
Chambers.
Donna, who has gone back to get her doctorate in exposition because she fills in Bobby Jingles Jr. in on the truth of his father's innocence. What happened to Margaret, which sends us into another flashback where she reveals that all the ghosts surrounded Margaret's cabin, like Roanoke season style, with pitchforks and hatchets and torches. And then meanwhile, inside the cabin, Brooke and Donna ambush Margaret, and they get the better of her, but not before Brooke is shot in the guts and she's bleeding out and she's dying.
Mm-hmm.
So before we find out what happens to Brooke, the ghosts drag Margaret outside, and this is really fucking brutal, and I loved it. They cut her arms off, they cut her legs off, and they send every piece of her through this wood chipper where its discharge chute is over the property line.
Yeah.
And it's she's like, oh, it's too late, because she's dying. She's getting woozy. She's losing her blood.
Mm.
She's like, it's too late. I'm going to die here. And Montana explains that the human body's head can survive 30 seconds after it's decapitated. And then they throw her they cut her head off, throw her body in the chipper, and then throw her head.
Okay. Exactly. 1 second too late.
And here's the thing. They give you like three different reasons why she makes it back into the camp.
Uh-huh.
But my first thought is like, well, okay, maybe the human head can survive for 30 seconds after being decapitated. I actually think that's bad science based on some questionable research done during the French Revolution.
Right.
Like a guy's essentially slapping a head and seeing if it has some kind of psychological reaction. But like the second you send it through the chipper, which is very much on the property line, that human brain is going to be shredded and you will die.
Right. Maybe it'll happen on most. I mean, the whole wood chipper, it's only the viscera that's going out,
mm-hmm,
that is on the other side of the property. The wood chipper itself,
yeah,
will kill you before it can turn you into the stuff that it's spitting out on the other side.
But then the show
and
gives
it
us,
did do that.
It, you're absolutely right. But then the show did also give us another explanation where like a mystical wind kicks up and blows the splash of blood back onto everybody.
Yeah. In the weirdest cut ever, and with Trevor going, what the fuck?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I'm like, what are they trying to, I'm like, oh.
Because it's kind of a spoiler for when she shows up later.
Kind of.
Takes away the surprise of that, I guess.
Yeah, but like, I feel like Murphy's like, well, people will wonder why she came back if we don't put the, and, but I'm like, no, I don't. This is ghosts using some kind of pop-sci medical bullshit to, I don't know, like, it'd be one thing if they cut her head off and just threw it over the property line and then shot the rest of her body over the chipper. Still, like you said, there's a whole bunch of gore and viscera on the, mm-hmm, inside of that chipper. Like, what is a body?
Right.
Like, if you leave someone's thumb in the camp, does that work? Like, what is in the ship of thesis way? Like, what is the body? Is the body the head? Is it the brain? Is, mm-hmm, it your teeth? Is it your dick? What is it? I don't know.
Well, nobody does.
So after this flashback, Finn takes a break to ask her if she's the one that was sending the checks. And he wonders if she wasn't the final girl at all, which sends them staking out a off-brand UPS store.
In Oregon,
because they've this checks that have been sent in have come from this particular routing number that's a very small branch in rural Oregon. So they're staking it out and wait to see if someone shows up, and Donna recognizes Brooke dropping off her weekly check. Turns out she survived and living the good life in rural Oregon. Now, we haven't talked about it, but like when I first saw Donna in her 30 years older makeup,
yeah,
I'm like, this does not look like a 60 or 70 year old black woman. But then I remember that Angela Bassett is a 60 year old black woman, and
look
she looks like she's like 31, and I'm like, okay, no questions asked.
Yeah, I thought it was totally believable.
Fucking Brooke, the aging makeup on her is ludicrous.
I'm not sure what they were thinking, or if they ran
it looks
in a
like
budget.
Emma Roberts just smoked two packs of cigarettes and showed up to set. That's how old she looks.
They put some tanning lotion on her face for some reason. They just turned her a different color.
Yeah,
and
a little bit
instead
of
spending
feet at the
any
eyes?
Time putting better aging makeup on her, they, mm-hmm, spent more time writing reasons why she,
yeah,
doesn't look good.
I was just wondering if, like, Emma's, like, they try to make these women look, like, realistically old, and they're just like, nah, fuck that. This is American Horror Story. Make me look awesome.
Yeah.
And then they're, like,
spot of gray in her hair.
Yeah.
Never had any problems with people recognizing her after that, even though she looks exactly the same for the last 30 years.
But they, yes, she's a famous serial killer.
Yeah.
But they explain it with this, like, hand wave away to the fact that her husband is a dermatologist.
Who looks like he's 23 from the pictures.
In rural Oregon, sure. And that's why she looks amazing, because she's completely given up all the stress in her life and replaced it with fillers.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, sure. Donna gets angry and demands to know why she didn't let her know that she was alive.
And good question.
And it turns out she would prank call her. She would just call, and when she would pick up, she'd hang up the phone because it's too painful for 30 years. How is it so painful? You have a perfect life. Like, maybe the first 5 years, maybe the second 10 years. Like, does she wake up screaming every night? Does her husband not know why? Does she traumatize her kids? Like, this is not the face of a woman who's carrying a whole lot of fucking trauma in her life.
No.
It's so hilarious.
She said she let go of the stress also. So,
yeah. So it's like, Don's like, well, anytime in the last 15 years when you've let go of that stress, could you maybe give me a call? So we have another flashback where it turns out that after she got shot in the guts, Ray came in, gave her CPR, poured iodine on her belly, slapped a Band-Aid on her gut wound.
The bullet passed right through. She's fine.
Drug her to the edge of the property, has a tearful goodbye as she stumbles across the line, and she explains that the ghost, and this I guess checks out,
yeah.
The ghost called an ambulance for her, and she woke up later in the hospital. And she reveals that
everyone's getting redeemed.
Redemption. She reveals that Jingles inspired her to do this because she saw how Jingles got pulled back into the camp by trying to save her son, and that she got pulled back into the camp by her need for vengeance, and she wanted Bobby Jr. to be better than that. So she gave him these checks on every chance and tried to hide the truth. I think that's implied that also maybe she might have talked to his aunt, and that's why she hid the truth for him for 30 years to try to keep him. Like by the time he finds out about it, he's a full-ass man. And he's got, like, the psychological wherewithal and the money to not get sucked into it. And he's like, wow, I can't believe all the coordinated effort that's kept my dumbass alive. And
I gotta go back.
And I'm going to not besmirch this gift by throwing it away. No, just kidding. I don't give a shit. I gotta get closure with my daddy. I'm heading back.
Yeah, I don't think his aunt knew. Otherwise,
it's possible.
Why wouldn't she just take the checks and cash them herself and provide for Bobby? Why does she have to tell him that he's getting anonymous checks?
Well, maybe that all came out in the wash when she died. You know, she has to spill it then.
Mm.
You know, because I actually think that's exactly what happened. Like, it feels to me like this is all very recent that he's found out even the partial truth about his father. So the other thing is, they drove together to Oregon. After he says that I'm going to go back to the camp, he walks off like David fucking Banner in the opposite direction from Donna. He's just going to walk from rural Oregon to camp, to like the forest outside of Los Angeles.
He's still recovering from these stab wounds.
Right. He was in pretty fucking bad shape anyway.
Hey, this is a spirit quest. This is a journey.
And I'm in for it.
You can't Uber your way through a journey.
You can't. It's cheating. So he walks back to the camp, and there's no Uber this time. He just literally walks up. So I'm just assuming, like, this is roughly 6 months later.
Mm-hmm.
Margaret confronts him right off the bat. Okay. Margaret has refused to rematerialize low these 30 years on the off chance that something like this would show up and she could get her ultimate revenge. Why the fuck didn't she reincarnate the first time and help the Night Stalker? Also, as she's explaining all this and she goes to stab and kill Bobby Jr., fucking Jingles rematerializes and stops her. Where the fuck were you when the Night Stalker almost killed this dude, man? Like, so, you woke up from your ghost nirvana and, like, hit the snooze button for 6 months to wait for him to come back, and now you're saving him?
Right. All ghosts who are at peace or at ill ease are just always ready to come back at any time as long as they've died here.
Yeah. Yeah. But not the first time. The second time your son comes back to camp. I love how frustrated Margaret's like, fuck, is as she realizes that Jingles is going to stop her from doing this.
Leslie Grossman is doing so good this season.
She's been a real She's been a real nice mid. I guess this would be Midlife Crisis, American Horror Story era pickup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really like having her around. So Jingles and Jingles Jr. hug it out, and Jingles Jr. gets the chance to do what he wanted to do, which is thank his father for all the sacrifices he made to give him a good life. And then Jingles says, "Forget this place and live." And I'm like, well, fuck that. Why don't you move to L.A., come visit your father across the property line?
They're always
going
to be there.
You can set up a card table across the property line, have a meal, you know, talk about the old times. Every Halloween, he can come to town with you.
Yeah.
You can spend the whole day, night with him.
Yeah.
Have the ghosts never wandered off the property line in 30 years of Halloween?
Nope.
Or going back to the 50s, like, no one's figured out that, like, Halloween, the rules are different.
Right. Just Ramirez. Every Halloween, he's able to sneak out because everyone's distracted.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody's distracted with the Halloween. What the fuck? Anyway, Margaret comes back, kills Jingles, ghost Jingles again, declares herself the true final girl, and chases after Bobby.
And then Jingles shows up and kills her again.
Nope.
And then Booth comes back and kills him again.
Jingles' mom shows up and kills her. And then she creepily touches her grandfather's face and says, "You're so handsome. You're so handsome. This is how my Bobby would have turned out. You're so handsome. Oh, God, you're so handsome." And then he's like, "Okay, Grandma," and he runs off. Then all the other ghosts show up. Montana says the 80s will never die. And then she says, "Get out of here," and does that whole old yeller white fang thing. She says, "Get out of here, Bobby." Yeah. They all throw stones at him. He runs yelping off into the woods. As Mike and the Mechanics start up The Living Years.
The Living Years.
And it's like, you know what? I'll give it to Murphy. He got me a little bit.
Absolutely.
This
that
is a
song gets me
song.
Every time. And
Finn Wittrock has got tears in his eyes. Jingles has got tears in his eyes. Jingles' crazy mom's got tears in her eyes. Little fucking Bobby's got tears in his eyes. It's not too late. It's not too late. Move to LA, get the card table, meet him on the property line, have some family dinners. Be a man, Bobby Jr. Be a fucking man. And that's AHS 1984.
That's it. That's the whole ass season.
It's the whole ass season. Couldn't have said it better myself. Ha. Like I said, as you can tell, I'm not blind to the problems of this finale,
mm-hmm.
but if you can't have a finale that makes sense, fucking make it be fun. Let the actors have fun. Let the audience have fun. And I saw in the forums there's a lot of people that were like let down and kind of bummed out that it didn't become anything bigger than it was. But this is the first time, I guess, that I can play the... I loved it. I think this is my favorite season of American Horror Story now. It was Coven is right up there too. But like I can't find flaw with the first five episodes.
Yeah, I agree.
It was so much fun to cover. The performances were great. The costuming was great. It's just fun.
Yeah, even down to this last episode, I thought they were all fun to watch, but I just get, you know, the first couple of seasons, I think they knew where they wanted to land.
Yeah.
And maybe it gets kind of messy along the way, but I feel like they know where they're going with the story. Whereas now I feel like they're really just winging it maybe a week in advance. And it's frustrating as someone who wants to be a fan of the show that it seems so simple.
Mm-hmm.
Seems so simple.
You know what AHS has become? It's like Saturday Night Live. It's like, you know, each season is like an episode of Saturday Night Live. There's going to be some things that are good. There's going to be some things that are bad. There's going to be some things like, what the fuck? And that could be good or bad. The special guest might add something to the show. The special guest might suck and take things away. The music act might be good. Sometimes Billy Idol doesn't show up. Sometimes Sinead O'Connor rips a picture of the Pope up and gets banned from the show. Like, but you keep watching it. You keep watching it, and then 5 years later, you'll say that why can't American Horror Story be as good as it was 5 years ago? When the truth is, it's always been like this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. Is it possible that is American Horror Story still capable of being scary? Because I feel like with Cult,
I think so.
Last year was Coven, where it's just very campy, and this one, like, I feel like they've given up trying to be scary.
I mean, Roanoke was scary.
Yeah, but that's been almost 4 years ago.
Oh my God.
And even then, Roanoke did have an episode or two that was creepy and scary, but that was pretty much in isolation.
Yeah.
So, and the early goings of it. I don't know. Like I said, I will show up for Saturday Night Live versions of American Horror Story if they want to finish out the run like this.
Yeah.
But everybody's taste is different, I guess.
Yes, they are.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move. House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you. In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Do we have feedback?
I do have some final girls and boys who wrote feedback to us. The last of this season. We start with Laura. Says, wow, I think it was Cecily that called it. Jingles now grown-ass son comes a-knocking at Camp Redwood's door looking for daddy. Brooke made it out alive.
Did you really predict that?
That Jingles' grown son would come back to look for...
I think maybe you did because you said the time, like, you know, if you think about 30 years from now, like it would be. But yeah, that maybe whoever did predict that, that was a good pull.
Yeah. Let's give credit to both of us.
I don't want it. I don't want it.
All theories we've taken.
I'm in negatives on internet points. I have been for years. So it's wasted on me.
Brooke made it out alive. And so did our minority. Way to rewrite the 80s trope of killing the minority, Murphy. Mm-hmm. Truly disappointed we never got a Billy Idol cameo. But when Margaret shoots Courtney and then tries to take out Trevor, there wasn't time for celebrity cameos. Had to know that Woodchipper was going to pay or play a part in someone's final moments when they spent so much time on it. In the end, my girlfriend looked at me and went, did American Horror Story just have a happy ending? And
sure
I guess
as fuck did.
That's a first. Eric says, first off, American Horror Story is moving to Hulu exclusively next year. Airing and later streaming. With this change, do you think
will
cover season 10?
It's not
going to
be on
10?
FX?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
Huh. Oh, or wait, it's going to be aired on FX and then Hulu's doing the streaming stuff. Either way, I don't think it affects our...
Pretty sure Eric just said American Horror Story is moving to Hulu exclusively next year.
Uh-huh.
Airing and then later streaming.
Hmm. Well, see, that's what I'm saying. Airing doesn't mean streaming. They're two separate things. Oh. So
I don't know.
So it won't be on the FX app even? Wild.
With this change, do you guys think you'll cover season 10? Please say you might as well see the rest of the series through. Maybe. Maybe. Like, I mean, if we're as busy as we were this year, then no.
Yeah, we have killed ourselves to keep covering AHS this year. It's been a real scheduling struggle with all the stuff we've had going on.
Right, but not just that. It's frustrating that the show, I don't know. It's frustrating that they're not giving as much as we are. They're not giving what they're getting from us as fans. Uh-huh. And the other thing is that our download numbers aren't the highest of anything else that we're doing. So I don't know. There's a lot of things to weigh when we consider covering.
Well,
season.
That's the thing is like we started off as strong as we ever were. But like our download numbers, like were half of what they are, like this for the last week's episode, were half of what they were at the start of the season, which is typically not what we do here in Baldwin. We typically, they either stay consistent or even rise.
Right. And
so, like, I don't know whether people, it seems like on Reddit, people just fucking hated this season.
This season itself was the lowest rated season in viewership of the show itself that has ever been. So I think people just aren't interested in American Horror Story anymore.
But
otherwise, this is the season to get excited for.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, you know, and but I think that, like, a lot of people were turned off at this season. I'm not sure why, because, like, I've always felt like out of pace with the American Horror Story community, that, like, when they love something, I hate it. When I love it, they hate it. I guess it'll depend. It's going to depend a lot of our schedule. It's going to depend a lot on what the next season is going to be about. Whether it is the final season, like if they say that, like, no, this is for real, done, like that will, I'd be more inclined to do that than if it's going to be another, like, well, maybe we'll get three more seasons, because Jesus Christ, at what point do you, you know, we quit covering The Walking Dead because we got bored with it, and it had 10 times the traffic that the show does, so.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't want to make any promises, and I don't want to, like, you know, rage quit the show either, because I'm not raging. I quite like this season.
Eric continues, the most shocking twist was that they had a good season finale. I love the way they used Jingles.
That's right, Eric.
I love the way they used Jingles Jr. for us to get the rest of the story. Montana was easily one of my favorite characters in AHS. Trevor and the rest of the good ghosts were also great. Something I was iffy on was Richard Ramirez. In Hotel, he died in prison in 2013. So fuck the connected universe, right? Is it just me, or could he have just stayed in prison when he got caught and the story wouldn't have changed a damn bit? With him out of the way, we could have gotten more Brooke and Donna. I felt they were an afterthought. They were the final girls, after all. And we kind of just used Donna and forgot about her.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if they could use, like, if Richard Ramirez was in prison, like, they got him and he died in 2013, and, like, something about, like, Satan resurrecting him then. But I don't know. Like, it is a little ahistorical, but...
Right. Or that they... Yeah, I'm just not sure why it had to be Richard Ramirez.
I think they cast this guy
perfectly,
and they, like, felt it's a kind of, like, you know, like Aaron Paul wasn't supposed to survive the first season of Breaking Bad, but Vince Gilligan and the crew loved him so much that they couldn't bear to, like, kill him off, so he became, like, one of the series' main characters. And I feel like that this guy. Which I want the Zach Villa. He did such great work and was so game and so fucking funny and good at what he was doing that they might have just, like, expanded his part. I don't know, because clearly this is something they write week to week, day to day. Like, they did not go in filming the season knowing what the hell they were doing. And also because, like, I kind of semi-serious, like, I made that as a joke suggestion that, like, Billy Idol is, like, honey dicking the production. But I do wonder if, like, hey, can we get some of these celebrities and then do some really fun, like, Camp Massacre? And then this was, like, the plan B if that never came together, that they'll just shoot around it. Because it kind of, and that would explain why, like, imagine if there was a whole episode that's going to be that slaughter, and then suddenly it goes down to just 9 episodes instead of 10. Right. And they just shoot around it. So, if so, that's a pretty good improvisation by Murphy and his team.
Yeah. The next email is from Todd. Todd says, you were kind enough to read my email last week where I commented on the show getting more and more campy, which led to a thoughtful discussion asking what is camp. Let me give you an example. The disembodied head of Kathy Bates sitting on a TV tray forced to watch all 8 hours of Roots is camp. Basically anything played for laughs is camp. The first 6 episodes of 1984 have more or less been straight parody, which by nature is played for laughs, which is why I felt like the horror was missing from the season until the last few episodes. That said, I really thought they pulled it together in the end and found their footing with these last 3 installments. This is the 3rd season set in a location that traps any spirits who die there, and yet the show has never addressed why that happens or what causes these places to become such traps. The show also has a unique conception of ghosts that are basically corporeal and can experience pain and even death only to resurrect each time. There's a sadness to both of these premises I find oddly compelling. I agree with that, and I didn't mention this yet, but I think the true happy ending would have been if they had broken the curse on the camp itself.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when Lily Rabe found peace, And she started the curse. Don't you think that would have freed everyone? That was the whole point, after all, for them to try to find
to see
some
them
way.
All dissolve, like, you know.
Yeah. And the living Return years as the they King. Dissolve.
Yeah.
No card table. They're just dissolving because you're not going to see them
the
again.
Curse is
everyone
broken.
Found peace.
Yeah. They all.
They're all standing at the entrance of the camp waving lighters. Goodbye to Bobby.
The only thing is,
Billy
the,
Idol
the only
was
thing
there.
That might have screwed.
I'm just dreaming
with his,
now.
With his silver. The only thing that maybe would screw that up is the fact that Margaret and the Night Stalker are still there. Because, like, if they. So they. Because now they have a new purpose, right? To keep Bobby alive. Like, maybe they'll all get to fade away once Bobby dies a natural death. Because, yeah, if they all just disappeared, then the Night Stalker's like, cool, I can kill this dude. And he's right here. Dumbass. Yeah. Came back. He was in Oregon. I'd never found him. Nah, he'd draw a pentagram and Satan him. And
yep.
Anyway.
Todd finishes, I'll probably rank this season somewhere above Colt and Roanoke, but I can't rank it too high. After all, they teased Billy Idol all season long, but in the end, he was a no-show.
That Agreed. Is a bummer.
Mm-hmm. Next email is from William. Excuse me? Where was Sarah Paulson? We were promised a cameo.
Were we?
We were.
Yeah, where were
the- we were promised a cameo. We all thought maybe
she's
Evan
in
Peters.
The Missing Camp Massacre episode.
Yeah. Yep. So Sarah.
I wonder
Paulson's
if that episode is shot and it's on Ryan Murphy's hard drive somewhere. There's like 5 minutes like reserved for Billy Idol, and he just never showed up, so it's just never going to get released. It's got Sarah Paulson on it.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. Maybe when the Blu-rays say- come out.
Wait. We go check his Instagram. Oh, there it is.
Oh yeah. The whole thing.
Next email is from Miguel. I thought this episode was an improvement on last week. I'm curious to hear how, since I know you guys aren't big fans of the constant flashbacks, even though this episode had a lot of them, I thought they all served a purpose and worked well narratively. Because I'm in class right now, I'm reading Mrs. Dalloway, and that book jumps all over the place. In this episode, the episode stayed focused on Bobby and his journey. Speaking of Bobby, I'm glad we got to see Bobby as an adult, since I thought it was going to be a thread left open. It was nice to see Finn Wittrock again, and the fact that he survived made this one of the happier AHS endings. Felt strange to end on such a happy note, since most season finales don't, but it worked for me. Miguel's also the one that in the subject line of the email said, let the wit rock.
Yeah, I thought he did real good. I remember him playing the dandy, and I don't think I've ever seen him play like a good guy before. Is that true? Has he played a good guy in the show before?
Finn Wittrock?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
But no, I thought he did great. I liked his I liked the way he performed Bobby. He's just like this kind of everyday every guy, you know, pretty wholesome. You know, to the fact that that end worked at all is kind of amazing. And I think you got who's the guy who plays Jingles?
John Carroll Lynch.
Got John Carroll Lynch, and you got Lily Rabe, and you got Finn Wittrock to thank for that, and also Mike and the Mechanics, because that song, is fucking right up there with Cat in the Cradle
Cat in
for
cradle,
weapons
yeah.
grade parental
plutonium.
Yeah,
parentonium.
Yeah, exactly.
Parental love unobtainium. Miguel says, I know Cecily has had problems with Jingle's character arc, but John Carroll Lynch is such a great actor. I felt like I have to let the messiness of the arc slide. The scene he hugged Finn Wittrock was great and probably one of the most touching in AHS history. Not as touching as when Lily Rabe touched his face.
That's bad touching.
Some people may hate that the same actors played themselves in the future, since it makes it seem like the characters did not age well in the last 30 years. I don't get why, though. There are real people who don't look like they've aged, like Keanu Reeves, Angela Bassett, and Salma Hayek. Keanu Reeves, it's starting to show.
I just noticed, like, when I was watching Matt Damon in Ford versus Ferrari, that that produce is starting to turn too. But it happens to all of us, you know. Where we got the grave and the grim reaper,
right?
Ahead of us, and we're all barreling towards it.
If you compare a picture of Angela Bassett to 30 years ago, Angela Bassett, she's gonna look different.
Yeah, sure.
She still looks great, but she looks like she's aged.
Sure.
You know, her skin looks amazing and smooth, but nobody thinks she's 20.
Mm-hmm. No, we think she's 32.
She's not 32. Nathan. I found myself really enjoying the season overall, despite its many flaws, which I feel like I say every season. Yup.
Yup. You've cracked the code.
I absolutely love Billie Lord and felt like she was the MVP.
She saw the gap left by Sarah Paulson. She's like, I'm the new Sarah Paulson.
Yes. She got shiny lips.
With the rebel
lips.
Yell, she seized control of the show.
She's a survivor, after all.
Yeah.
I think she should have had top billing over Emma Roberts, who for me felt more guest star. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Well, they didn't ask Brooke to do... They didn't ask her to do much with Brooke either. Like, Brooke is just a good girl. Mm-hmm. And everyone knows the bad girls and the villains, they have the more meaty parts.
Yeah. And they don't survive. Well, why wouldn't you throw Margaret's head over the fence? Whether or not there's still brain activity for 30 seconds after decapitation,
right?
She should have died completely while still inside the wood chipper anyway. Agreed.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we...
agree. That's just ghost science.
I mean, here's the other thing. It's like, if I leave the house and I've been at work for a few hours and it occurs to me that maybe I left my hair straightener on.
I can't wait to see where this is going.
Yeah. I'm not going to go home and turn it off because I don't think there's going to be a fire. Like, the risk mitigation there is, maybe.
It's probably either my house is not on fire or it's burnt long ago.
Did this milk go bad? Maybe. I'm going to drink it and try it.
Mm-hmm.
When it's forever? Being trapped with Margaret, eternity mm-hmm. with her living with you, you don't want to be very, very sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
That she's dead somewhere else.
Because they're like, yeah. Montana, I think I saw this in a magazine once, sure.
Yeah.
You want to be like a board of neuropsychologists have said, absolutely, a human brain can survive this and be off the property in some kind of living state, sure.
Right.
And they were not that sure.
Right, or have the entire wood chipper on the other side of the fence.
Yeah, well, then they can operate it. I guess they could.
Yeah, the head, if you still think it's alive, when you toss it into
like,
the wood chipper, it's
like, can a ghost take a
still...
big stick? Like could Ghost Montana throw a rope to living Trevor and drag him across the line? Can
yes.
they do, like, fishing... essentially,
yeah. Tie all of her leg warmers together.
Yeah,
I don't see why not.
So it's like, yeah, they could have like taken a stick and pushed that thing right over to so just the input chute is mm-hmm. is hanging over the fence. They did it backwards.
Right.
These damn ghosts. They rushed into it. They got a hate boner and they rushed to beat it off. They should have taken some cold ghost showers. Tied up Margaret Booth and decided what they really needed to do.
Right, you know, when you have this much time to plan.
But their thing is they need her to die. They need her to die off the property line, but they need to make sure she's dead. So I kind of get like they can't just like shoot her and kick her off because then what if an ambulance comes by and picks her up? Then they're fucked, right? So I get. That they have to do something like this, but yeah, think it through. You got time.
Yeah.
You got time.
Cut off her arms and legs, toss her over the other side. Don't have to wood chip her at all. Then she mm-hmm. just dies painfully and horribly. And if she does come back, well, she's a ghost that doesn't have arms or legs. Or are they healed?
They probably heal.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah, because Xavier wasn't all burnt up and shit.
Yeah,
so.
That's true.
They had the residual ghost image, like in the Matrix.
Also, the rule about having to die while strictly being inside campgrounds is something they played fast and loose with because the amnesia camp counselor
yep.
could get in other people's cars on the way to camp. Yeah.
Yup.
No Billy Idol appearance, and they're apparently damned to continue their watch of Ramirez for an eternity of stripping while playing board games. But I had a lot of fun watching anyway. Agreed.
Yeah, they can't ever, because like... It's not like it's cool to set the Night Stalker free on society. Like, oh, I guess Bobby's dead and it's the year 2069.
Right. Nice.
But you can't just let him, you can't just unleash him, right?
No, I mean, they actually did kind of explain this, that if Ramirez had died off property, the devil could have brought him back
again. That's what
again.
I'm saying. Yeah, he's going to come back no matter what.
Right. And the devil only gives you little boosts. He's not going to save
I
you
think
from
they
this.
Should
he's
have
just
done...
going to like mist around the knots and loosen him up.
Yeah.
But
do you think they could have done like a Russell Edgington and like chained him up, dug a pit, and poured like a swimming pool's full... amount of cement over him.
You mean actual Russell Edgington from True Blood?
Yeah. Could they have done that to him? And like, or I was thinking like the whole time, it's like, why can't they put him in like some kind of Iron Maiden type device or in a metal locker to where like if Satan resurrects him, he's still stuck in a locker. But then Satan made those ropes disappear and dissolve.
Right.
So
they just loosen up the locks.
Yeah.
Plus, it's just the body is your like respawn point.
Mm.
I think.
That's what I'm saying. So take the body and just like put it in something that a human body can't get out of.
But it doesn't matter because his ghost would still be there.
But he's not a ghost. He's a he gets reincarnated as a physical. That's why he can leave the camp at any time. He's not resurrected as a ghost. He's like Satan reconstitutes his body.
I miss that.
Yeah,
I miss that.
Because he can just moonwalk right out of there anytime.
Well, then yes, Russell Edgington, man.
Yeah. But I don't know, maybe Satan can send, like, there's like a misty, it'll be like a black shadowy, what do they call those, like a jackhammer drilling through the concrete, and then there'll be like a ghostly shadowy bolt cutters to cut his chains.
Yeah.
You know, you still can't take your eye off the ball.
Right.
You still got to play that strip Pictionary. Keep an eye on it.
Which actually sounds fun. I'd play strip Pictionary with Chef Birdie.
Yeah, you play strip anything. Strip Skip Bo.
No, with Chef Birdie.
With Chef Birdie?
Yeah.
I mean, after 30 years, no convincing. I want to see what she's got to teach me.
Day one.
Yeah. Yeah. Day one.
I'm just, you know what? Here's another errant thought. Montana and Xavier got together bafflingly, and then it didn't matter. So again, my point stands that they should have never hooked up and been a thing.
Oh yeah, they were just passing time.
What if Trevor had gotten together with Chef Birdie in the afterlife? That would have been a fun pairing if we're gonna go for camp. You know, they joked with each other about, you know, in the first few or the first night, Trevor was like,
funny,
"Oh, I got dibs on Chef Birdie." Yeah, no, it's funny.
Yeah.
But when after they die, if they actually got together, it'd be even better and funnier.
I don't know. I actually was rooting for Trevor and Montana.
Really?
Yeah, I was shipping them. Yeah.
Oh wow. Nobody. No, I don't think anybody has believable chemistry.
Really?
I don't think Ray and Brooke. Chet Birdie.
No.
I don't really believe Montana and Trevor. Montana and Ramirez, they have believable chemistry, I guess. Passion and fire.
Yeah, I mean he played the Night Soccer so weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, they kind of sizzled, kinda.
That's all I've got for this week and for this season.
Yeah, I'm spent. I'm ready for Satan to reconstitute me after the season is over for my loyal service to the demonic Murphy Empire. The email's ahs@baldmove.com. But you know, there's no more show, so we won't get to that till next year. But we do have the forums, forums.baldmove.com. If you'd like to have your final thoughts, your final boy or girl thoughts, you can post them there. And we will see, like, you know, if this is I can't imagine this is the only Bald Move podcast you listen to, but
right.
If it is, next, as it gets spooky times, the frost starts gathering on the pumpkins next year, look us up, see if we're going to be doing American Horror Story. I promise you, we'll be doing the other spooktacular. So if you're jonesing for some Aaron and Cecily, spooky action, come see us next spooky season. And until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
You say you just don't see it. He says it's perfect sense. You just can't get agreement in this present tense. We all talk a different